This is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to The Drift Space.
Initiating neural engine in 3, 2, 1.
It's your boy, JR. Meant to sound that a lot cooler, but I just came off as one of those stereotypical gamers. Two-person episode today.
Yep.
I got G with me. We recently just got, we're like, hey, let's watch Tron. So we're going to talk about Tron today. Tron is one of my favorite movies, and I went on Pizza and Parsecs long time ago, and I declared this the movie that basically started turning me into a nerd at the young age of like 10 or 11. So this movie kind of holds a weirdly deep spot in my upbringing. It's not one of those movies I would declare near and dear to my heart, but
oh no.
but it does have a influence on my upbringing. So let's dive right into it. Tron is basically a movie about a programmer. One of his fellow competitors stole his design for a video game and became a big shot CEO of the company while he was he fired? I don't think he was fired.
Was Flynn fired?
Yeah.
No, Flynn was never part of the company. Flynn's games were stolen.
Yeah.
And that's what built the company Incom.
I thought they worked together. He and Dillinger. I thought he and Dillinger worked together at Incom. And then he rose through the ranks. And I guess Flynn just kind of quit because of all the backlash.
Okay, no, you're right. He was a former employee of Incom. Yeah, you're right.
So Flynn comes up with this idea to break into Incom and try to steal the evidence. Well, Dillinger has this huge, like, automated system known as the Master Control Program. And once the Master Control Program realizes Flynn's back in the system, he develops this plot to basically digitize him and kill him inside the computer.
The grid.
Yeah. I mean, this is before Tron Legacy, so I'm using all this terminology as it comes.
Well, they called it the grid in this movie.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay. They did. The grid.
The digital world.
The digital world.
Which is strange. I didn't see any Digimon.
What do they call it? The games. Kill him in the games.
Yeah, kill him in the games. Yeah,
and then he's basically got to help these programs that are trying to shut down the MCP, also they can get online and talk to other companies. And that's basically the synopsis of the movie in a nutshell, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Flynn goes in there, meets with Tron, a program trying to, you know, set all that's right and...
Yeah.
Save the digital world. Digimon. Digital monsters. Digimon are the champions. Tron. So I gotta say, I was never a huge fan of Tron growing up.
Like and for preference, for those who haven't seen Tron, Tron came out in the 1983.
Yeah.
1983. Yeah. So it's considered a cult classic.
Well, I don't understand why it's just considered a cult classic. It had a budget of $17 million. It made $50 million, which back then
is a lot of money.
Yeah.
This is also kind of the pioneer age for Disney doing all the digital stuff. I mean, like you said, this is Matrix before the Matrix.
It is the Matrix before the Matrix, and we'll get into that. But I think the main thing that Tron is all about is the visual aspect. So, right.
Gotta
pop open a cold one for our audience. There you go.
Again, Liquid Death, sponsor me.
Jeez. So the the visual aspect is, you know, they're in these costumes that are kind of lit up in post, essentially superimposed, composited onto a computer generated background backdrop.
Right.
And this isn't CGI exactly. No. This is just computer generated graphics of sort. Very dated by today's standards.
Oh, very, very dated.
But you know what? I kind of love that it looks like it does. There's a sort of kitschy beauty to
it. Well, even I will admit this, even back then, and because I saw this movie when I was like 10, so it had to be 1998, something like that.
When you were 10? No. You were... No. It was 96 or 95, 96.
No, I was born in 96.
No, you weren't born in 96. You were born in 86.
Oh my God, I'm an idiot. This is what happens when you record three episodes in a row.
In a row? Well, that's all right.
Yeah, so even back then, these graphics were dated. And I think that's what I fell in love with, is the campiness of it.
Oh yeah, it's definitely got camp.
It's definitely campy.
And it's interesting because you have, when the movie was made, working with like green screen, working essentially with sets that aren't actually there, wasn't very prominent. Not like it is today. I mean, every blockbuster that comes out today
has even an iota of green screen.
Right. They all have actors working on green sets of some sort, right?
Right. Like even the terrain around them is green screen, but they know, like, that block, that green block over there is supposed to be a hill. Why can't I say hill? That block over there is supposed to represent a hill.
Yeah.
That you have to walk up.
But, you know, actors today are used to that.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of actors work with these kind of sets and whatnot. This was not very popular then.
No, this was pioneer stuff, yeah.
These are actors who aren't used to this kind of thing. But you have talents like Jeff Bridges and David Warner who are absolutely killing it with this kind of new experience in filmmaking.
Right.
And you know me, I prefer physical sets.
Oh yeah.
Over anything. But you have to respect the cast who aren't used to working in this kind of landscape, being the pioneers of this kind of composite work going on, right?
Yeah.
And you have to get good actors to do it. Now, there are moments where they're in the grid where it kind of feels like the acting isn't really lining up with what's going on.
Right.
But I think
like
that
where he's like falling off the cliff, like he's getting ready to fall off the cliff and he's doing this with his arms.
Right. Or there are many points where David Warner's character, what's his character's name while he's in the grid?
Oh,
the program.
Sark.
That's what it is. Sark. When Sark is being tortured by the MPC.
Oh yeah.
Or MCP. MCP. He's being tortured by the MCP. And the dialogue or the actions aren't quite lining up. I don't think that's a performance issue. I think that's an editing issue. Because you got to think, editors were fairly new to these effects as well.
Right.
You know? So I really have to hand it to the cast and the crew and the editors and the effects team for putting together something that wasn't a very prominent form of effects filmmaking at the time. And these actors did a hell of a job working with something that they weren't used to.
Mm-hmm.
Now today, I mean, you know, Chris Pratt walks onto a set. Well, he's done movies like this before,
right?
You know, whether it's Jurassic World or
he's touched a dinosaur.
Right. No, he holds his hands up to absolutely nothing. And that's going to calm it down. Right. So I don't think that the actors in 1983 had the same sense of how to work with these kind of effects as actors do today.
Right. Well, it goes back to that. What was it on Lord of the Rings? Ian, what was his name?
Ian McKellen.
Ian McKellen said this was not how actors were supposed to perform their trade.
Right.
Where he was sitting in a green screen alone talking to an orc or something like that. And he was all alone, and he just said to himself, this is not how we're supposed to be acting.
Yeah, he broke down in the middle of a scene and says, this is not why I got into acting.
Yeah.
And I get that. And I get that. And I think that when Tron first came out, it was demanding a lot from its actors that they weren't used to. Now, the unfortunate reality is that it happens all the time now.
Yeah. Now, it's the trait of the profession.
Right. I guess what I'm trying to get at is this was more impressive to me in this movie than it is in, say, Star Wars Episode II.
Right. Well, again, this was the pioneer of that age. Uh-huh. This is literally like the starting point for green screen and stuff like that. And that's why I think I'm drawn to this movie so much. Not the fact that, other than the fact that it's all, you know, taking place inside a computer and all that. But from my young age, seeing this as performed, you know, these backgrounds aren't there. And this is like ahead of its time.
Hmm.
It really spoke to me.
Well, and in talking about the designs of the graphic designs of these sets and whatnot, yes, they're dated. And I mentioned how there's a kind of kitschy beauty to it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of enjoy the juxtaposition of the lack of detail and just how different it is. Because, I mean, we can get this, like, pristine, you know, detailed, textured CGI today fairly easily, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But there is something interesting about watching this very, like, the minimalism to it, the early graphics and whatnot. And I'll say this much too, in terms of the costumes, I actually prefer the lit up designs on the costumes
as opposed to the modern Tron Legacy, where they're all kind of like circular and
long and thicker lines. Whereas, here they look like circuits.
Well, yeah, because...
like motherboards.
Because they are supposed to be programs. Like...
yeah.
Yeah. That's why I like the dialogue at the beginning of Tron, where he's comparing... Tron Legacy, where he's comparing, you know, the circuit boards to roads. Mm-hmm. And because these are programs, these are moving parts in a computer with a singular job, whereas in Tron Legacy it's just like, okay, these are people in a computer.
Right But but getting down to the, you know, the aspect of how they look too, they just look more like
they
computer circuit boards.
They look like they belong inside a computer, mm-hmm. as opposed to what we got in Tron Legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
And it's the costume designs I thought were fantastic, honestly. Yeah. And as dorky as the helmets look, I love them.
Oh, I love those helmets. You know what I was noticing while we were watching it is all the like important programs like that are written for like Tron and Flynn. And what was his name? Ram. They all have like the helmets.
Yeah.
And lesser programs like at the IO Tower. And I forget her name inside the computer. They wore caps. Like.
Yeah.
The face cap. Like there's a distinguishing.
They were almost like skull caps or.
Yeah. Skull caps, I guess.
Like a swimmer's cap or something.
Which distinguished them between programs.
Mm-hmm.
Which I really, really enjoyed. And even when you first see what's-his-face at the I.O. Tower, he's got that ridiculous get-up where it looks like his helmet is like an ice cream cone or something that he's buried into the ground.
Yeah.
Get the I.O. shovel. what was it? Get the logic board.
Yeah. Get the logic board.
We're going to need the logic shovel to get him out of here.
And then we're going to get the logic crane to haul his ass back to the...
Get me the I.O. bucket. I mean, as campy as it is, I really do enjoy Tron. And I, you know, this is where I fell in love with Jeff Bridges. One of my favorite actors of all time.
Who does a fantastic job here. Like, from the get-go, he seems like... You get a sense of his character.
Oh, yeah.
You get a real great sense of his character and how kind of full of himself he is. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of a maverick.
Oh, really. Definitely.
He's just...
And, you know, going into Tron Legacy, I felt like we kind of lost some of that stuff. With him becoming like kind of this kind of spiritual, kind of meditative guy within the grid. But then he says stuff like, "You're really killing my vibe, man."
No, you're really killing my zen thing, man. That was my favorite line from that one.
You're really killing my zen thing here, Sam.
Yeah, this was Jeff Bridges, you know, young and brash and really, really taking the role by the balls here. And I really appreciate just how like energetic he is throughout the entire movie.
Well, you know, we talk about some of our favorite actors, how over the top they are.
Yeah.
Like Jim Carrey is just like rubber faced. Mm-hmm. How he has to be for some of his performances. And I felt like Jeff Bridges being in the mind frame of this whole scenario is taking place inside of a computer, I have to act as if, you know, I actually am put in this situation. Because, you know, all these other actors have literal direction to be speak in a straight monotone voice with no
emotion.
Because they are computer programs. And this is my purpose of speaking like this. And Jeff Bridges just has to come in over the top and be like, "Whoa, man, this is all happening. Hey, this man, is all real.
I'm gonna be the dude, man.
One day I'm gonna be like, you know, the dude.
And like really tie the room together, man.
I'm gonna have a rug. It's gonna be great."
It was also interesting to me, you know, this isn't really explored, it's just kind of hinted on at how, you know, there's a division between believing in the users and those who call them just religious fanatics, and they're being persecuted for that. And I'm saying that we don't really explore that too much. I feel like maybe Tron Legacy dives into that just a little bit more.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting sort of side plot that kind of adds to the expansion of this universe.
Right.
And once a user, you know, comes down, descends from the heavens and becomes one of them.
Which is also very interesting if you look at it from the MCP's point of view, who is talking to a user on a daily basis. And yet he's the one telling everybody the users aren't real.
Right.
I'm the one true program over this entire being.
Right.
And then he's systematically taking out the people that say, no, the users are real. It's got Holocaust vibes to it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Well, when they're imprisoned, definitely, you know, for that stuff. It's the persecution is interesting. I don't exactly know what they're trying to mimic there. It's an interesting subject in that, you know, religious persecution is something that's happened plenty of times in the past.
Right.
And in this particular case, you have a character that's trying to hang on to power and doing that by enforcing the religious persecution.
Yeah, ruling through fear.
Which, I mean, pick a card, any card. That's happened in so many different cultures through so many different times in history.
Right.
That it's interesting that the flaws of humanity are found in this digital world.
Right.
And, you know, when Flynn comes in, a user, proof that the users are real, it kind of renew some hope in those that know that he is the user. Right. And at the end of the day, he's the one who saves everything.
Yeah.
You know, he's the Christ figure.
Yeah, he literally is the Christ figure. He sacrifices himself.
Mm-hmm.
So Tron can have that winning frisbee shot, man. Just get a game of Ultimate going. Side note, when me and my college friend were watching this, we renamed this Tron the Frisbee of Power. Because literally that's all that it is strapped to their back is a frisbee. So, like, when they're drinking the energy, the water, you can clearly tell it's a frisbee.
Well, it's so, I mean, I sit here going, all right, money was put behind these costumes.
And we're just going to scrap.
Money was put behind the composite cameras that were used to shoot all of this footage and integrate them into these computer-generated sets. And they pick up a 99-cent Frisbee from a drugstore downtown.
I'm surprised they didn't
paint it with lines to make it look like a giant Target.
I'm surprised they didn't pick up the ones with the lights on them. Let's save some cost, man.
And, you know, Bruce backs up to Tron. He gets the Frisbee from Alan, right? The power disc from Alan. Looks at it, goes like, the thing that will save us all. I'm like, dude, I could have gotten you that. Like,
right?
CVS down there. I've got
five in the back of my car, man.
Oh my gosh.
No, I mean, it's fun to talk about this movie because, like I said, this is like the cornerstone of what turned me into the film buff and the nerd that I am. So it's fun to talk to you about it because, you know, you're, like you said, you're not one of those, like, it's not one of my favorite movies, and it's not necessarily good, but it does have implications of, like, being significant within film history.
Okay, all right, and that's something that I do think needs to be recognized. Good or bad, I think the movie works as a visual piece.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There are things about it that are narratively awkward. Like, I think Flynn's introduction in his, when he was playing that video game.
Oh, yeah.
When Alan finds him in there, is a better introduction for the character than when we first see him trying to hack into the master control program.
Right.
And because when that happens, you know, we're just a little confused.
Yeah. What's going on?
What's going on? Why is this happening? Yeah. Who is the clone of him in the computer here? I mean, we could kind of piece it all together.
Yeah.
But I feel like the movie spends too much time throwing us into this digital world at the very, very beginning without much explanation. When it really could have benefited from introducing us to characters in the real world first, you know, ground this universe before we go absolutely bonkers
right
in the grid.
Right.
Right. And I think that the introduction of him playing video games was so much stronger than the introduction of him trying to hack into the mainframe.
Right. Yeah, no, that's one thing I think I'm going to compare it a lot to Legacy, because, you know, Legacy does build up that suspense of there is this other world that my dad was talking about, and it was all, you know, at one point it was all speculation, and now that I'm actually here, the religious ramblings of one man are now true.
Right.
And I think that's where it succeeded. The whole Tron franchise succeeds in Legacy, but I prefer more the design from Tron.
Well,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Legacy did a great job expanding on a lot of things that were set up in Tron. We just had to wait, what, 20, 30 years?
And we'll have to wait another 20, 30
probably
years for Tron 3.
But regardless of how well the story works, I think the movie is incredibly entertaining and very watchable based on just the world it builds, the design aspect, and quite frankly, the characters are fun to watch, if only because the actors are so strong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, David Warner, I told you, he's big known in Star for Trek. He was the Chancellor Gorkon in Star Trek VI. Mm-hmm. He was the Cardassian that tried to convince John Luke he was looking at five lights. He was Ra's al Ghul in Batman series. The Animated Series, right? This man is a classically trained Shakespearean actor, mm-hmm. and we have him wearing a giant sock with a cutout on his head.
Delivery. Sure, I'd love to come up with those, with those guys in accounting. Let me at him.
You know, which is great, though. You know, if you're going to have fairly flat characters with a very difficult special effects shoot ahead, you need actors that can bring more out of that.
Yeah.
And they do.
Yeah.
David Warner is fantastic. He was a fantastic actor. He was an incredible actor who breathed life into any role he stepped into. And Jeff Bridges, for what little he actually has in this movie, he is having a ball.
He is. He's stealing his own movie is what he's doing.
It is his movie.
Yeah, but he's stealing it from himself.
It's a little odd that there's kind of a long stretch where we don't see him at all. It's better when he's bouncing off of other characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, once he reunites with Tron, the movie, you know, we have a movie again, But, no, I think the movie largely works. Could the writing be stronger? Absolutely. Are there some editing gaffes that kind of show the seams with the special effects? Sure. Okay, that's fine. But overall, we have a movie made for its time with very strong visual aspect and vision to it, very strong world-building aspect, and actors who are having a really fun time with their characters.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, when I think about this movie, I think about one of my favorite. It's also educational. I love the line from Flynn where they're on the solar glider. And they're like, how did you do that? And he just goes, energy can neither be destroyed, only converted. Are we there yet, Mom? Like, the act just took so much out of him. He's tired of explaining it. Energy can never be destroyed, only diverted. Are we there yet, Mom? No, but you're right. I'm like, when Jeff Bridges isn't on screen, the movie definitely slows down.
It definitely does, yes.
I'm thinking in particular when between the where Jeff jumps into the IO stream and him reappearing in the real world, there's that, like, what? It's like maybe 3-4 minutes gaps, but it feels like 15 minutes. there's like, because the dialogue goes back to being straightforward, monotone computer talk. And they're
who has dialogue in that instance?
Tron and what's her name?
Okay.
Where's Flynn? It was amazing. You should have seen it. He jumped into the stream and saved us all.
I think a lot of the dialogue is flat anyway, but I do think that there's moments where, particularly where Flynn is trying to find his way back to Tron and whatnot, that goes on for too long, just because I think a character like Flynn, who's so energetic, needs to bounce off of someone.
I think that is a sign of not knowing what to do with technology that isn't there. You know, he's trying to drive a derezzer or recognizer, and he has no real direction.
Mm-hmm.
He's just pulling strings, and he doesn't know what he's doing. So it does fall a little flat.
Here's the aspect of the movie that I absolutely cannot stand. And while I concede that in a way it does fit with the movie for the time, I think even for the time, they could have done better. The music sucks.
Oh my God, this music is awful.
Like, especially, it
is terrible.
You know, I mean, it's an aspect that was incredibly improved by Tron Legacy with Daft Punk.
Yeah.
But the music here is not something I enjoy hearing as the visuals are going.
Yeah.
It's not. Does it sound like it's taking place
in a video game for the time. Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Is it good?
To a fault. To a fault.
Yeah.
It does.
It sounds a little too mechanical and purpose-driven.
Yeah.
The music sounds like it has a function, and it fulfills that function, if that makes sense. It sounds very computer generated.
Yeah, no, it was awful. I was not. It was by Wendy Carlos, who has a very long and prominent career with electronic music and electronic music scores.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, doing some work for even Stanley Kubrick in A Clockwork Orange and The Shining, which honestly, I do remember the music in those movies. Being
I remember
very good.
The music in The Shining. That was a good music.
Yeah, no, it was perfect. It was perfect. Tron, I'm not feeling it.
No,
I'm not feeling it.
Literally, Tron's music feels like it has a purpose to be bad music.
To be wallpaper,
yeah.
I think is the kind of...
That's probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah, to be wallpaper. So, but what about... What's your favorite aspect of this movie? Is it Jeff Bridges, or is it the designs? Or
I think, I guess, rely on nostalgia for this answer. What really drew me to this movie was the costumes and the visuals. Because you'd not seen anything like that when I was at that time of age. Like, we hadn't gotten to Jurassic Park levels of CGI yet.
Well, not in 1983. No, not at all.
No.
Not at all.
Like, this was new and fresh to me. This was something I had never seen before. So I think the visuals had a lot to do with that.
I'm going to have to agree. I, as dated as they look, I have a fun time with them.
Mm-hmm.
I have a really fun time with it. And I respect the ability to do all that.
The work that goes into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems so pedestrian these days because we see it in every movie now.
And better and much better done.
More seamlessly done. I'll put it that way.
For some movies, it's almost unrecognizable.
But there's almost a sense
uncanny
of,
valley.
I mean, way uncanny valley because there's no possible way these computer graphics look. I mean, let's take the light cycle scene.
Oh, I thought you were comparing the graphics to nowadays. The graphics are
that's
level of
yeah,
but the light cycle, yeah.
I mean, clearly, complete lack of texture.
Yeah,
very wide open environment. There's really no sense of scale to it, and at the same time, I kind of love that about it.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. So I think I enjoy how it was done back then over how just by the numbers it feels today.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what catches me is that, you know, okay, so they did this through composite cameras and a whole lot of computer generated image, not CGI, but computer graphic imagery.
Yeah.
and it's worth applauding both as a stepping stone and as just a really fun visual exercise for the time.
Right. Yeah. You know? No, cause I'm sitting here looking at your shelf and I'm staring Jurassic Park right in the face. And you know, Jurassic Park at that time was animatronic and a little bit of computer animation.
Yeah. CGI.
Where you can build some of that actually in a computer. They actually, for Tron, they actually did this work, like, in a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of my favorite aspects.
And then pasted it onto a computer-generated background.
Right,
yeah, yeah.
Which I think is one of my favorite aspects about filmmaking. It's one of those reasons I went into the craft that I did so I could learn tricks like this. Making everything work on an actual set, despite you get what I'm saying, right? I know you're looking at me kind of crazy, but you know, like the tricks they did back then are definitely not the tricks they have now.
No, but they're still viable.
Yes. They're and still they're, very they're still doable.
Useful.
And they can be done much easier nowadays. Speaking of a quote from Jurassic Park, you didn't earn it.
They did. They eventually did.
They did.
They eventually did. And I think the legacy of Tron is so many things that have come after. I mean, I joke that, you know, this was the Matrix before the Matrix. But at the same time, you know, it has kind of a one Christ character in it, right? Yeah. And a whole world crying out to be saved and everything. Yeah. It was... It's a little interesting how similar they are in some aspects.
Yeah, right.
You know, we have a main character who realizes, you know, late in the movie, he has these powers to sort of manipulate the digital world he's in.
Because he's the creator of that world.
Right, yeah, right, right. Yeah. So... Yeah, no, I think there's a lot in Tron to appreciate. I think there's a lot in Tron that filmmaking today has to thank.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has Jeff Bridges.
It has to thank Jeff Bridges for being Jeff Bridges.
We also have to thank it for just more Jeff Bridges.
You're right.
Is the main thing. I mean, we also have to thank Kong, the 1970s Kong, for bearded Jeff Bridges.
But, so we can have Jeff Bridges bearded in Tron Legacy.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, no. It's funny, you know, we talk about movies that aren't great, but we have to give them credit for their craft because, you know, I've not seen it all the way through because it's just utter garbage. But, you know, we wouldn't have Pixar today if it weren't for Howard the Duck.
Okay, you don't have to explain that one.
One of the early creators of Pixar worked on Howard the Duck, and some of that it may have been some computer editing that was done on Howard the Duck, and that person later went on to help start Pixar. Have you not heard that?
I've never heard that story before. No.
Yeah, you can look it up. I'll send you the link.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's just interesting how, like, little things back then turn into huge things now.
Well, and something that I see a lot of these days, and I kind of wonder if we're doing it too often, is we see a lot of movies being reevaluated as well. And I think, you know, Tron is definitely one of these movies that I've reevaluated, especially after our recent viewing. Was it last night? Did we watch it last night?
We did.
And it's just... feels like it's been so long since yesterday. Good grief.
Well, I mean, without Jeff Bridges.
Well, yes. And so I feel like watching it last night, I've had enough experience movies since the last time I've watched it and working on movies since the last time I've watched it that I can appreciate more about it these days. And I'm evaluating it for what it is instead of what it isn't, which is a gorgeous visual template, and a great experimental visual template, and some wonderful actors put in a situation that they're not used to.
Yeah.
You know? So with that said, no, I give Tron higher marks than I have in the past. And I think this is a movie I will revisit and certainly kind of explore how it was all done.
Yeah, it's I mean, because I remember you and I going through some of the special features and we're like, we should probably watch the commentary.
I agree.
On Tron, because that's something I have not yet to do. But it is, I won't say it's one of those movies I come out and watch like every so often. It's definitely a movie that I need to reevaluate every so often.
Well, and I want to be careful with that, because do you ever feel like too many movies are being reevaluated? Because at one point, okay, so you just brought up Howard the Duck, right?
Right.
And I recently read an article about how Howard the Duck is now being reevaluated.
Oh my God.
As a better movie than we left it as. And we get to a point where we start reevaluating so many movies that were once thought terrible more positively. And I start thinking, maybe we're just lowering our standards.
Well, I think to that degree, I will pitch this. Are you really reevaluating it based off the movie, or are you reevaluating it based off your nostalgia for the movie?
So, I don't like nostalgia.
No, nostalgia is a dangerous thing.
No, it's a very dangerous thing. I don't like nostalgia. I think nostalgia is not a positive drug. I think it keeps us kind of pigeonholed in the past. It keeps us from moving forward and experimenting, and it keeps us from accepting the expansion of certain franchise movies and whatnot. So I would like to say no to the nostalgia. I don't think that's entirely true. I would like to say no, nostalgia does not override my enjoyment for things. That being said, I don't have a lot of nostalgia for Tron in this instance.
Yeah.
So I think my reevaluation is coming from a place where I didn't really care for this movie. I've recently watched it, and I find more to like about it today, more to take away from today with it. And I think that leaves a better taste in my mouth when I look at the movie.
Right.
Now, in other cases, I think a lot of people have been looking at movies that have previously been considered bad and are thinking, actually, well, you know, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe it's not that bad. And some of these movies really are terrible.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
they
yeah.
really are awful. You know, Transformers 2007. I don't think that movie is awful, but I'm not going to sit here and reevaluate it as some sort of like, oh, we were too harsh on it. Right. You know, it looks like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'll grade it on the Michael Bay curve, but it's not a very good movie. No,
yeah. No. See, like, all right, I'll bring this up. Another one of my movies from my childhood, which I absolutely love, is Short Circuit. Love Short Circuit. Is it a good movie? No. Does it have excellent puppetry? And does it, like, bring out some of the stuff that, you know, filmmakers should be able to pay attention to? I totally agree that that kind of stuff is there. But if you go back and reevaluate it, I wouldn't say, like, to this day, if I go back and rewatch it and be like, oh, Short Circuit's one of the greatest movies of the 1980s or whatever. I won't say that.
I don't think anyone's going to say that about Howard the Duck, but I think it's fair to look at Tron and see what it did and what it had as opposed to what it doesn't have and be like, okay, you know what? There's something there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Howard the Duck and Transformers, I mean, are certainly there's aspects about Transformers to enjoy. I'm not going to deny that, but I can't place it in the same vein as Tron,
no.
Where I feel like there's more that influenced the next 30 to 40 years.
Right. No, I can, like, I will not say, I mean, maybe because, like I said, I hate Howard the Duck. I can't stand it. But maybe are these people saying that it's a better movie than we remember it? Or are they saying we were too harsh on it because for the time, this was groundbreaking stuff? Are they grading it on that curve, or are they grading the movie as it's better than I remember it?
Well, okay. I think probably both, because it depends on how you're looking at it. I think the people who are looking at it as, it's better than I remember, are more casual viewers.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who are saying, hey, there's some groundbreaking stuff in this that really influenced decades of filmmaking.
Right.
Probably have a greater appreciation for film.
Okay.
So.
I don't know. I enjoy watching it. I think Tron still doesn't hold up as well as it did, but it's visually pretty. The costumes are pretty. It's a fairly decent fun movie. Is it high in my rating scale? No, but I enjoy watching it.
I would say that how dated it looks is a strength these days. I like movies that
date themselves.
Date themselves, yeah. Yes. I do like movies that date themselves. Because it makes me want to learn more about what was going on in that era, that time, that decade. But I like movies that date themselves. And I find the visual vernacular very interesting to experience. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm down with you. I very much enjoyed it, probably more than I've ever enjoyed it before.
That's good.
This round with you. So, high marks for Tron.
What was your favorite moment?
My favorite moment
in Tron.
Okay. The games where they're playing on the platforms.
Yeah.
That disappear little by little when you hit. I thought that was such an incredible visual, especially for the time. I sometimes wonder if the visuals were strong enough to communicate what was going on with the platform immediately, because I was a little confused when he got tripped up.
Yeah. You forgot the platform was there? Like, that one was gone?
I don't think it hit me that platform was gone yet. But as I kept playing, I realized what was going on.
Yeah. No, again, I think that has to do with more of the selling of the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Because those visuals aren't there for them. So they have to they have to remember that one is gone. And they have to adjust accordingly.
Yeah.
And again, ahead of its time, this has never been done before. So it's purely up to the actor.
And it was an amazing idea, honestly, to come up with that whole entire concept for the games.
Yeah.
I really like that.
It's really fun. I gotta say, I enjoy watching Jeff Bridges be deconstructed. Like, by the Honey, I Shrunk the Kid machine.
Oh, right. The shrink ray.
I love watching him being deconstructed bit by bit. I think that is such a cool visual.
By the giant 3D printer.
Yeah. I think that is such a cool concept that they pulled off in the 80s. To freeze frame somebody and then go in with a computer and digitally take him out frame by frame. I think that's so cool.
The earliest version of Photoshop.
Okay, Jeff, we're going to Photoshop you right here.
Flynn, we're Photoshopping you out of the world.
Be like, Jeff Bridges would be like, okay, yeah, man, that's cool. One question, what's Photoshop?
Adobe.
Now, the one thing I will close off on this, because, you know, there's not a whole heck of a lot to talk about Tron with. The one thing I will, personal note, nerd victory, if you will. This year, I have actually found a arcade Tron cabinet. So I've got to play Tron for the first time in my life. And that was a nerd goal of mine. And man, it is freaking hard.
Well, you said you almost beat it, though.
It is. All right. So the way you do it is you have to play the games.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do the light cycle, which is probably the hardest one.
Yeah.
Then you have to do the Pong, what they were doing at the beginning with the grid disappearing.
Yeah.
And then you've got to fight the IO spiders. And then one other thing, I forget what that is. But the hardest part is the MCP. Because as you're trying to break the grid around the MCP, he's coming down on you. So you're trying to like find the spot. You're trying to break right the spot, but it's also rotating and getting closer to you. And then all on top of that, you don't have a joystick. You know how some of those old computers have like the mouse wheel?
Yeah.
That's what you're using your control with. You don't have a joystick. So it's a pretty challenging game. It's fun. It's fun as all get up. But it's pretty challenging. But I finally got to play Tron. Lifelong goal achieved.
Well, I'm glad you got the goal.
I can die a happy nerd.
All right, you want to do some Fanboy 50?
Yeah, let's do some Fanboy 50.
I'll go first with the Fanboy 50.
All right, let me time you. Get my clock out here. burr, 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 clock. All right, on your mark, set, go.
Okay, so last time I ranted about how Burning Godzilla from Godzilla vs. Destoroyah was not created by either Rodan or Space Godzilla. This time, I'm going to Shin Godzilla. No, Shin Godzilla is not a conglomeration of lots of microscopic creatures into one being. That is a rumor, a false rumor that started before the movie even hit American theaters. And then it perpetuated into this iota of information that apparently everyone now thinks, well, not everyone, some people still think that Shin Godzilla is like Destoroyah or Hedra, lots of little microscopic beings creating one thing. No, he's not. He's a prehistoric animal who is mutated. They say this in the movie. It is quoted in the movie. Watch the freaking movie.
And you're done.
I still sorry. I don't. Some people just need to pay attention.
I like how you said we're not going to like do poorly pitched anymore because they kind of pigeonholed us into doing episode by episode. Make sure this one's. So now I've got to make sure. Dragon Ball Z episode.
No, that's fine. I didn't. We'll go with just like last time. As like last, at some point last time.
Last time about. On the Drift Space.
See, what it was is that when I said last time, it's kind of like those episodes in television where it's like last time on Lost, but it will show you like the last like seven episodes, right? So that's what I meant by last time. All right, you ready for this? On your mark, get set, go.
So they're re-releasing Spider-Man No Way Home to theaters, and I could not be more excited. Why? Because it's my birthday this week, and when is it being released? On my birthday. What am I going to be doing on my birthday? Watching 11 extra minutes of No Way Home on my birthday. Did I say my birthday enough? Recently, it was kind of spoiled that we might be getting, like, the extra 11 minutes might be what happens to Toby and Andrew after they go home from the portal.
Oh, really?
That's the rumor I've heard. So, real excited to see that. If that's true, God, I hope it is.
Time. I didn't know that about the footage, though. I don't want to know anymore.
No, that's all I was rumored that's what that might be. So I'm hoping that's the truth. Okay. Because I've also seen floating around the Ethernet Amazing Spider-Man. Hashtag Amazing Spider-Man 3 worked.
Okay. All right.
So I'm kind of giddy when it comes to Spider-Man news right now. All right, guys. Well, thank you for sitting around with us, GJ and I, as we ramble about Tron and how it's just a fun movie and a dated masterpiece for certain
That's
events.
Not a bad way to put a dated masterpiece. Dated, I can kind of get on board with that. I don't know if I entirely agree with it, but I can run with that.
It kind of fits.
It kind of fits. Raise my voice a little bit. Gotta higher pitched.
It's just because you're in the digital world.
Digimon, digital monsters, Digimon, all the champions.
So thank you all for joining us on our discussion of Tron. If you want to know where you define me, my name is JR. If you like my ramblings, I'm over there on Twitter at littleman_says1. I have the, what's it called? Instagram, Littleman Cosplay. Check that out. But most of my time is meant on Twitter now, where I just, or not Twitter, TikTok, where I just entertain myself. I do it for me. I don't do it for y'all. You can find me there on Littleman, at Littleman Says.
And I'm G. You can find me on Twitter at Gman and Mysterioid and check out my Substack called Deferential Wrath of Arresting Markalite Canon at markalite.substack.com.
And we, in fact, are just programs walking around this computer hell trying to figure out what to do with our lives. No, we are the Drift Space.
That was morbid. God, jeez.
Take a look at our show at the link bit.ly/TDSLinks, where you can find us on all your favorite podcatchers. If you like this episode, make sure you share it with a friend. Repost, retweet, and rewind us. You can always say hi on our socials at The Drift Space. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for playing along, and remember, always stay strapped.
And always
fight for the user.
Fight for the user.
I fight for my friends. I fight for my friends.
I fight for all in one.